Cast. I'm your host, Christian Gonzalez, co-owner of Creativity Design Group, a digital marketing firm in Houston, Texas. Today, we will be discussing what small business owners can do if they are impacted by a rise in costs such as minimum wages, such as the rise to $20 an hour that was just announced in California, with a prime focus being on the food industry. Increasing operating costs that we have no control over are a huge sucker punch to the small business industry, and today we are going to cover some tips over how small business owners can stay afloat amidst the chaos. Chef and restaurateur Michael Brown of Jam Burritos joins us to discuss this major quandary. Welcome back, Michael. It's always a pleasure to have you on BizCast.
Absolutely. It's good to always be here, Christian, and to help your listeners in any types of situations they may find themselves in the restaurant business. So we're here to talk about some of the answers to some of these challenging things that are coming up in the restaurant industry.
And this episode is going to provide a lot of insight over how restaurant owners and small business owners in general can handle these challenges. So my first question for you, Michael, is what costs do restaurant owners unfortunately have to pass on to customers when it comes to rises in minimum wages or other operating expenses?
That's a really good question. And there are some basic costs that one should, and I wouldn't necessarily look at it as costs that have to be passed on, but it's more about costs that help the restaurants to stay viable and to stay in the black. And so in some cases, that could be every line item on the profit and loss statement. But the ones that are more easily managed, not the fixed costs, those are the variable costs. So those are things like food costs and labor costs. And so here we're talking about the labor that has gone up to $20 an hour in the state of California, which understandably so, the cost of living there is pretty expensive relative to other parts in other states. And so a restaurant that is forced to go up to minimum wage with, when you look back maybe 10 or 15 years ago, was nowhere near that amount. It was probably closer to 13 in some instances, depending on if you were a server or not. Even servers getting paid back in a day like $2, $3 an hour plus tips. But now, you know, because of the rise of the cost of living, COVID has driven the costs up so high that it has made food costs and labor issues very, very prevalent in our industry. And the one thing about costs that go up, they almost never go down. A lot of the costs that we're dealing with in the food categories have to do with transportation. So an item that was inflated over the COVID period might be inflated 100% based on transportation alone. And so back to your original question about what costs do restaurant owners unfortunately have to pass on to their customers, typically they're strongly related to labor and food costs, both of which have gone pretty high. In some cases, certain items have been up 200%. And some of those items are key items like, you know, dairy items, center of the plate items like meats and so forth. But I think that for our listeners' sake, we have to, as an industry, consider the viability of our businesses, understanding that we are an essential part to our communities in terms of serving. A person gets up in the morning, they go get their coffee, maybe the Starbucks coffee. They might pick up some breakfast elsewhere, lunch and dinner for the family. So we are an essential part of the gross national product in this country. Almost every other business has dependency on restaurants, on food service companies to provide what they provide in order for their businesses to go on. Conferences, conventions, weddings, cruise trips, ships, all those things. We're going to always be somewhere involved there getting food to people. So I think that if we start to look at our businesses as essential to the economy, we also have to look at our viability, our ability to stay afloat. I remember when I came up, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, most of us restaurateurs would be cringing at raising prices because we felt that our customers would just not come back. And it was an unspoken way we operated. We just felt, you know, that we would have trouble and we would maybe go out of business because our prices had to go up. And a lot has changed in the last 30 to 40 years. So technology has increased in cost. In fact, for our restaurant operation, this up and coming one that's opening up sometime in the fall, we have added to our cost analysis a thing called the tech stack. And the tech stack has to do with all of the technology that we need to actually provide food service to our customers. And there's a price in that, you know, and even more so, it's not a price that one-time expense. It's actually a recurring price. All of our POS systems are recurring. Our accounting systems are recurring. Our online ordering systems are always being paid monthly. Our inventory systems, our procurement systems, all of those systems, and even HR now is a constant cost on the bottom line. Or I should say that affects the bottom line. So I think my advice would be here is to look at your business as a whole. Look at your profit and loss statements, at least minimally every month. Find out what areas are fluctuating, where they're going, where they're coming. Come up with strategies so that you can actually find better margins in certain areas, whether it be specials that you run or purchases that you make that are involved. But don't be afraid to raise your prices because, again, you are an essential part of this economy and people will pay for what they want. Now, if you're offering great service and quality product, conveniently served and located, you will survive any of these issues that are coming up with. And more importantly, when you're talking about labor, you know, there's been some studies done that money is not always the motivating factor for people to do a good job. So if you treat your people well, and if you understand that the people that are your frontline people are the most important people to your business, and you treat them well, you know, we have a thing called extreme hospitality in our restaurant. Well, that starts with treating your staff, your employees with extreme hospitality, and then they can deliver it to your customers. So at the end of the day, you can't go backwards, but you can certainly look forward and you can actually come up with strategies that will sustain you over the time and you can still be as profitable. Never give up your profit margin line. In the restaurant industry, we are doing well. My friend Russell Yabarro says he tries to stay right around 15%. That means every dollar made is 15 cents in the bank. That's why we say this is a business of pennies. But if you love it, you do everything you can to maintain it, to keep it, to grow it. So I think that while it is challenging to deal with these expenses that are increasing, that are variable, it's important to do what you have to do to maintain your margins.
Yes, very well said. A lot of great insight there. I want to kind of go back to what you said a little while ago about not being afraid to raise your prices, because unfortunately, raising your prices can be inevitable at certain times. And Wendy's announced back in late February that they were going to roll out these new menu boards that would allow dynamic pricing. And a lot of people misconstrued what they were saying. They thought that this meant that they were going to be implementing what they call surge pricing, which means that they would raise the prices on certain menu items depending on the demand. And a lot of their customer base reacted. They said they would not go to Wendy's anymore if they were just going to raise their prices like that. So raising your prices can sometimes be venturing into dangerous territory. However, you have to know when to do it. And remember that offering great customer service and, of course, a great end product in the end doesn't really have an effect on how people perceive the cost. They will be willing to pay whatever amount they want to pay if they see that they're getting a good value and, of course, great service with that.
I'm looking at the dynamic pricing that we're talking about. And just for our leaders or our listeners to understand that the practice of dynamic pricing is varying the price for a product or service to reflect changing market conditions. And so we see that happening in other areas. We see that happening in the fuel industry. We see that happening in the travel industry. So in the restaurant industry, it has never been practiced. And let's look at it from another side. Our vendors that are selling us products are definitely doing dynamic pricing. So we are called to be magicians and to soften the blow, because from week to week, the price of beef can go up and down. From week to week, the price of produce. In fact, in the produce industry, the more expensive it is, the less quality you'll get. So when the crops are doing well and they're looking great, the price is cheaper. When the crops are, you know, looking sickly or there's just a scarcity of it, the price goes up. But as I said, in the restaurant industry, we have the challenge of dealing with those situations from the back end and producing a product on the front end that is palatable from a perspective of price. So I remember back in the day, they used to say, okay, when you raise your prices, there's a strategy in terms of numbers. So if you price something out at $9.90, say $9 or $9.50, you know, you should go up to $9.99. And so I'm not here to try to, you know, give pricing strategies. I just wanted to point to the fact that there's a like a formula for, you know, what play with people's eyes, you know, so when they see, so that they don't notice price increases. But I'm sort of led to go in a different direction now with my restaurants, and that is to be upfront. There's a concept that I learned years ago called truth in dining. It could reflect pricing. It also can reflect ingredients and, you know, quality ingredients. And let's say you say I'm serving crab meat and it's actually fake crab meat. You know what I mean? So that kind of thing. What I propose is that we always look at pricing, but we have a periodic price adjustment period. Maybe it's twice a year. Maybe it's once a year, whatever that is. At that point, you're always committed to doing that. Now, in order to understand what that price point should be, you'd have to watch the market. Again, I'll refer to Russell Ybarra, the owner of Gringo's and Chimichangas and several other concepts. And I asked him one day, I said, well, what do you talk about at your executive meetings? And he says, the primary thing we talk about are the commodities, the price of beef, the price of pork, and so on and so forth. That highly affects him because he has 27 or 28 restaurants. They're all doing, you know, $7, $8 million a year. You can imagine how much beef and pork that they're purchasing. And those are the key items for them that they have to watch consistently. So I would say, you know, check your pricing, be committed to raising your prices at least once a year, and then understand the flow that will happen in between. So let's say beef goes up at first quarter. So you kind of mark that and you say, okay, I've just dropped a couple of profit points because of the beef went up and it's going to fluctuate a little bit up and down. And then you kind of just follow that quarter two. Okay, I gained a couple of points. Quarter three, I'm down so much. When it comes to quarter four and you're ready to start to change your price on your menu, you could have an information letter to your customers, you know, say, we're very sorry because of some market, you know, we have to raise our prices. However you word it, you know, in a way that is palatable to them, then you change your prices, but you're changing your prices based on an annual forecast and not just a knee-jerk reaction to a change in the market, if that makes sense.
Yes, there are a lot of different variables involved when it comes to just raising prices, and I think you covered all of them very well. The average consumer doesn't understand why companies have to raise their prices. A lot of them just think, oh, they're just being greedy. They're just trying to raise the price because they want to make extra money. No, that's not the case at all, and you just explained very well exactly why companies, especially businesses related to the food industry, where the costs are always changing, have to raise their prices. Unfortunately, when vendors raise their prices on certain items, then restaurants have to raise their menu prices because otherwise they're not making a profit and then they'll go out of business. They'll end up closing their doors. And that's not just the restaurant industry. That's also really any industry. And you mentioned that earlier as well. Now, talking about the retail industry, 99 Cents Only Stores just announced a few weeks ago from the time of us taping that they are going out of business. They have locations in 6 states, including Texas and California. They cited COVID, they cited inflation, and they cited high theft as the reasons why they can no longer make a profit and felt they had no other choice but to close their doors. And unfortunately, that's what ends up happening when we have no control over certain external factors that cause rises in prices, because not every cost can be passed on to the consumer, and not every consumer is going to be satisfied seeing items that they normally purchase go up in price. So that leads me into my next question for you. You may have answered this question in parts just now, but what changes would you say have to be made internally to help offset costs related to a rising minimum wage or anything in general, you know, such as changing vendors, types of food you're carrying, the brands?
Well, you also mentioned earlier about a company that had to close its doors. And one of the items that you mentioned were pilferage, you know, people stealing from them. And so I don't believe that that is a external factor that cannot be managed well, especially in today's day and age when you have cameras. And then if you're taking inventory, and I always stress key item inventories on a daily basis. So if you're burger industry, you should be counting all your burger patties every day, you know, because you want to know, okay, so this machine says I sold 1,000 burger patties. I started off with, you know, 1,500. Well, by golly, I should have 500 patties left today on my shelves in my refrigerators. So those are key items. Those deter people from stealing. So those are certain factors. Now, some of the other factors, you're correct, they were out of their control. But as I go back to something that I said earlier, is that we're kind of like magicians because, you know, we have to take all of these external factors and manage them well and do due diligence intelligence to make sure that we are aware of where we stand, just like we would manage cash flow. That's the big part of our business is cash flow. And in my recent projections for this restaurant that we're opening, you know, I said, okay, if I start off with $100,000 in the bank and I do XYZ, by the end of the month, I should end up with this in the bank. And you just kind of zigzag that through a 12-month period. And based on your projections, you see at the end, this is what I also have. It's very eye-opening to see what that looks like. So you talked about changing vendors. When it comes to dealing with food vendors, you have a challenge because they're in to make money and they will sell you an item at one price and then sell a larger concern the item at a different price. Doesn't seem fair, but they base a lot of their sales pricing on volume. So we have a thing called cherry picking we do in the industry where we say, okay, I'm going to give these two broadline distributors a purchase order every week or how often that I'm going to order and have them bid it out, so to speak, and fight it out. As long as I'm giving each one of those vendors a reasonable amount of business, and in our restaurant business, usually there's a minimum of like $300 to $500 per delivery. So, but I would be more apt to think that I can get the best pricing if I'm giving each vendor at least $1,500, maybe $1,000 to $1,500 a week. Now I have a structure where they're able to say, okay, I can get rebates for this customer, or I can give them a few points off on their cost because of their purchasing and volume. The other things that I like to do, and I think that in the fast casual industry and in the fast food industry, is not commonly done, but you see this often done in the full service restaurants and the fine dining restaurants. They'll have daily specials. The daily specials have an option, or gives you the opportunity to charge a price because why? It is something special they don't always see all the time. Let's say you have a daily special that has shrimp involved. You also have a menu item that has shrimp. Let's say that item is $15 on the menu. You can possibly get away with charging $16 for this daily special because it made with a special sauce, or it has a unique value proposition, meaning something that the people don't see all the time and they're nostalgic to them because it reminds them of something that they got back home, whatever it is. Now you have a margin managing system for adding a few points to the bottom line. When it comes to labor, though, that's something that is always very challenging to be creative about. One way is that I think if you work closely with your bookkeeper and accountant, you can minimize some things like overtime and, you know, keep hours under a certain amount per week. And I'm not an accountant or a CPA, and nor am I a financial specialist in the restaurant industry, but I know some of these things can help. But the raising of the minimum wage could be something that could be almost have to go to the bottom line. And as I mentioned before, be in a price increase situation. And the world knows that this is our case. This is what we're underneath. They don't want us to go away. And they're spending money almost like, I think people are spending money more than they did before COVID. And they're spending it for things that are creature comforts that help them to go out and make more money. And so if you're good, if you have quality, if you're producing a product that people want, and you're giving a service that exceeds their expectations, I would not be so worried about raising prices. I would still be managing well from the internal part of it, do what I can do to manage it well, making sure that my staff is fully aware of how important it is that they help us manage these costs, that they're being utilized efficiently. The more efficient an employee you have, whether they've been paid $20 an hour or $10 an hour, more money is going to be made. And I've seen this happen before. I can bring in a $10 an hour employee and he can get 70% of the work needed done. I can bring a $15 hour employee. He could get 100% of the work done in shorter time. Guess what? I'm ahead of the game. So I think the key also would be in hiring when it comes to labor increases, making sure that you're hiring people that are proficient at it and the right person at the right job and getting the right training. And I believe in training at a glance, which minimizes a person's need to actually think through a process because the process is posted on the wall.
I think it's good to allow vendors to compete for your business. And I also think that it's important to look into some of the more intricate details related to hiring when it comes to picking the right staff. When it comes to vendors, sometimes you can't just change vendors abruptly whenever you want. You might be in a contractual relationship to utilize that vendor for a certain period of time. But in general, when it comes to making changes to your internal operations, such as third-party vendors. Sometimes such changes are necessary in order to keep our costs afloat or to keep them in check to ensure that your customer base can still afford to purchase your products and services. So when it comes to making sacrifices in order to save costs, what items do you think restaurants or businesses in general can cut? What can be done internally instead of being outsourced to a third party where you don't have to spend extra money to get certain things done? Such as, for example, if using a bookkeeper is expensive, maybe it's cheaper to hire one internally.
Well, that's the age-old question. And I think I'm at the opinion at this stage of the game, after 40 plus years in a business, not all owning my own businesses, but at least more close to half, that it's best to pay the professionals to do the professional work in this industry, because you're drawn in so many directions when it comes to managing a restaurant. It's also easy to show. It shows really strongly. If you ever go into a restaurant and you see the owner running around, waiting on tables and doing all kinds of stuff, something is lacking somewhere in the way that business is being run. If you see an employee who you walk in the door and you say, hey, I see that you had this special going on, and the employee says, what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. Something is wrong from the top down, because marketing is not lockstep with operations. If you see your business gets audited, something is wrong, because they didn't have the right systems in place to be audit free, so to speak. If you have a fire in a restaurant, it's typically due to the fact that the grease hoods haven't been cleaned out on a regular basis. You did not hire a professional to come in and do that. And grease has built up and a fire will ensue. I made all of these mistakes, by the way. And I can go on and on and on. So when it comes to cutting costs, I am now of the opinion, and I think my mentor, I'm going to keep saying this guy's name, Russell Ybarra, who is highly successful, he doesn't cut out the necessities and the professionals that are necessary to help this business grow. He'll focus more on sales and the way he treats his staff and markets himself. So especially when it comes to finances, bookkeeping, don't try to bring it in-house, in my opinion, because you could have a staff member that is cheaper than a bookkeeper. You know, the average bookkeeper right now is about $50, $60 an hour, maybe more. The average CPA is $100. $50 an hour. And my experience as a CPA, I only really needed at the end of the year to do my taxes. And at the time when I was doing it, it was like $500 for the year. So that's not too bad. I have a feeling it's going to be different now, probably closer to $7,000, whatever. And so you have somebody do your books on a monthly basis, and they're going to basically be able to download everything from your banks and run profit and loss statements at the end of the month and send them to you so you can review them. But the last thing you want to do, and I've made this mistake several times, is think that all of a sudden, you know what, I can somehow bring it in-house and do my own bookkeeping, own accounting. It's way too much to try to handle. I mean, you might as well say, I'm going to go out and kill my own cows and slaughter my own beef. If one day I get the opportunity to do that, it'll be after I have like 1,000 stores and it makes sense to start to slaughter my own cattle by owning a cattle ranch. I don't know, but or partnering with someone. But that's the picture I want to give our listeners as to what they try to save money on. And those support systems you need, the legal systems, the accounting systems, the software systems and so forth, pay the price. Get it done so you can actually manage your business and work on your business rather than in your business.
And that's one of the most important things that every business owner should know. You have to work on your business, not in your business. Those are the words of Doug Winnie, the action coach, business coach I interviewed several episodes ago. Those are his exact words. When you can operate on that mindset, you'll start to see operations become more streamlined. And of course, when things are more streamlined, there's less margins of error. You're starting to see things fall into place. Customers are satisfied, sales numbers are higher, and then of course costs are moderated whenever possible. And I also want to mention as well, if Mr. Ybarra happens to be listening, I have eaten at your Gringo's location in Spring. Food's terrific. Now, Michael, how should restaurants respond when they notice a drop in customers due to rising prices as a result of rising operating costs?
Well, I think it's more of a proactive response than a reactive response. So proactive goes back to what I shared earlier, and that is letting your customers know, gently know when prices are about to go up and maybe having some supportive reasons why they are about to go up. And I believe if you do that, you're honest with them and you're still delivering an amazing product, that you're not going to have any attrition. But if in fact you did all of those things and you actually do have an attrition, then I think, you might want to, let me go back to proactive measures. So how many of these customers are part of our loyalty club? How many of these customers do you have access to and they've given you permission to reach out to them via email? How many of them are loyal followers on our social media? Once you've exhausted all those communication areas before prices get raised, and I'm going to go in a different direction real quick and talk about what people did for restaurants that they liked during the COVID situation. They didn't stop ordering. They didn't stop going to the restaurant, especially where we're going to be located in Missouri City. I was told by restaurateurs in the Missouri City that they actually increased sales and had to hire people because the customers would not let them fail. And why did they not want them to fail? See, that's a double-edged sword. If you're bad, if you're not good, then they're going to let you fail. But if you're good, they actually help these restaurants stay in business and actually increase business. But again, to your question, and then if after the fact you still have attrition, now you're going to have to really start to wonder why. And it's not always the price increase. It could be an attrition based on the fact that you're not listening to the customer, that they are not happy, they're not satisfied with what you're delivering, and you were inconsequential in the first place. You were there because you might have been on the way to work or whatever, it seemed convenient. But when the price changed, I found somebody else who is more consistent, has a better product, treats me better when I go in. And now this is just giving me a reason just to walk away from you. In that case, you have to go back to the drawing board and start to win those customers back again with some organizational structural changes. There's nothing wrong with a comeback, but you got to understand it is a comeback and it is something that you will have to, I don't always like to use the word have to, but it would be incumbent upon you to go back to the drawing board. Remember, everything rises and falls with leadership. So you can't blame anybody else but the people at the top. It's important to share a vision, a new vision. And it's easy to just say, it's because the prices went up. Well, you know what? Let's be real. We pay for things that we really like. I'm living in a city right now where people drive around in the most expensive car that I've ever seen in any city that I've ever lived in. And not only that, they're all different. There are like 10 different types of Mercedes out there. Three or four different Porsches out there. Lexus cars I don't even recognize. They came from another country because their value proposition is meeting the clients, the customers need. And so blaming certain things is not the answer. Blaming all these external challenges is not the answer. But understanding what is causing the problem, what is the root of the problem, and fixing those things will, I believe, get you back on top again.
And yes, that is true. Now, I want to speak as a consumer now. As a consumer, I can honestly tell you that I have never quit patronizing a business simply because their prices were rising. Why did I quit patronizing certain places? You listed some good examples. I've been to places to where I was treated rudely, where I was shown that the staff just didn't care about the customer, or they weren't listening to their customers' needs, or they simply were not keeping certain products I needed in stock. Oh, those are all reasons why I quit patronizing certain businesses. It was never because they rose the prices on certain things. It was usually because of something related to operations. And I'd say the biggest one out of all of them is when they don't listen to the customer's needs. When you, as a business owner, do not listen to your customer's needs, then in my opinion, you automatically should not be in business because you're in business for one reason, and that's to solve a customer's problem or to satisfy a customer's need. And if you're not doing that, then you don't deserve to have your business. That's always how I've seen it. I've never quit patronizing a business simply because I didn't like their cost. Sure, I might find alternative to a certain product or service if I can get it cheaper elsewhere, but that's never my primary deciding factor when it comes to how much business I'm going to give a company. So yes, there are so many different factors that influence consumer decisions. Pricing can be one of them, but it's not the main one, really. It's usually a lot of the other stuff that you and I just talked about, mainly related to how customers are treated and ensuring that their problems are solved. Now, my final question for you is related to how independent mom and pop shops can stay afloat when costs start to rise. So let me explain a little more. Operating a franchise brand is much different than operating an independent mom and pop outfit. Franchises offer a lot of support to help their franchisees stay in business, and sometimes franchisees even continue to operate under a brand that goes bankrupt and out of business due to not being a debtor in their parent company's bankruptcy, should their parent company go bankrupt, that is. So small mom and pop brands do not have this luxury. What I'm saying is that if Burger King were to go out of business tomorrow, a lot of franchisees would probably still be allowed to operate under the Burger King name because these were independently operated locations that were not affected by Burger King's bankruptcy. So what can independent brands do to stay afloat when costs start to rise?
So independent brands have the unique ability to pivot and to innovate as opposed to a franchisee, you know, or even a franchisor, because, you know, the systems that are created with the franchise model oftentimes are like trying to turn a ship around. You know, it takes time, a large ship. So what the independent person can do is they can decide one morning, I'm coming in here and I'm going to do this, make this change or that change, and they don't have any red tape to go through to get it done. Now, a lot of that can be based on like ground, or what we call guerrilla marketing, where they use ground tactics. For example, we had our restaurant in Irvington, New Jersey, Michael's Backstreet Cafe, which was on a cul-de-sac and down from the main street. You know, I said, okay, I'm going to track people that are on the sidewalk at the main street to my restaurant. So I got some old Capizio shoes and stepped in some pink paint, which pink was our color, Dusty Rose. And I just created footprints on the sidewalk all the way to my doorstep. You know, a franchisee might not be able to do that, right? I did that and people started walking in and seeing the footprints. There was a time when we got reviewed by the New York Times and I had a lunch scheduled for the day. And my wife said, hey, look at this article. And I knew that we were going to have an overwhelming amount of people for dinner. And so I was able to close down for lunch because it really wasn't busy anyhow and prepare for dinner. And then that night we turned away 50 people at the door, something that would have probably violated somebody's franchise clauses, you know. So really, you know, getting down to the local market, getting entrenched in your local community is something that will probably be a greater opportunity for you as opposed to a franchisee. We know that you're not going to get the best pricing when it comes to your vendors, but you can do your best to try to cherry pick, as I said before. Sometimes you may have to go pick up a few things. Even that, though, I'm starting to wean off of as well, because every time you get in a car to go buy something, you run the risk of getting in an accident, and then, or your employee getting in an accident or something like that. And then you have the cold chain that you don't want to break between the way it comes from the place you buy it to the place you deliver it to. All of these things have consequences. Not that it hasn't been done, but I'm just saying, you know, you want to try to not rely on that 100%. One of the things that we're going to be doing at the restaurant is called John Burrito's downtime show. So we know that between 2 and 5 o'clock is dead. There's nobody here. People are finished with lunch and getting ready for the close of their day. Well, we know there's a certain amount of people that are going to be home, working from home, or they are home, what do you call it, people that take care of the home, and they don't work or what have you, they're retired. We're going to do some entertaining things throughout those in the restaurant. So we're going to have the downtime show will be including things like cooking demonstrations, spoken word, maybe even a gospel choir. One recently that came up, people out here in Houston Market like to do the two-step, okay? And then New Orleans has the line, second line. So we might do a little bit of classes in that. So this way it keeps people in the restaurant, makes the restaurant look busy. So I think if you're keeping your pricing, you're keeping your margins where they should be, you're using guerrilla marketing tactics to get your business known, and most importantly, you're listening to the customer. We have this thing now, we call it, I hear you, and I hear you is the way that we go about looking at reviews. And so every review has a commitment to being responded to 100% of the time, good or bad. And then at the same time, those reviews are going to be used to help us know how well we're doing in the eyes of the customer. So all of those things combined gives you total power over your own destiny. Whether you be, even as a small mom and pop, you can definitely eventually be that franchisor because you have taken your local market and you worked it to the point of duplicating your systems, establishing goodwill, and the next thing you know, you might be going on to build your next store and your next store. And just when you think about this one, I want to give you one other point. There's a thing called a branchise and there's a thing called a franchise. Franchise are corporate-owned stores. Franchise are independent operators of a larger corporation where you don't have as much control over the quality and the service that is given in a franchise as opposed to being a franchise. Each one has its pluses and minuses, but I think in the beginning, if you're establishing a concept that you want to eventually branch out with, I think corporate-owned stores are a better way to go.
And that was a very good comparison between the two. A lot of people are probably not familiar with the concept of franchising. What I did like is how you gave a rundown of different factors that brands should look into, especially if you're a mom and pop shop. And I can see that Jam Burritos is well on its way into success because you've thought everything through. You know exactly how to look into what customers need, what customers want. You know how to listen to the customer, understand what they're truly looking for when they come to a restaurant like Jam Burritos. And no matter what business you're in, it's very, very important to understand that you listen to the customer. Listening to your customers is what keeps you in business. It's also what builds your brand's image up in the public eye. And you're right about franchises, because franchises involve a lot of management from corporate. Even though they don't own these locations, you still have a lot of restrictions. I mean, if you own a McDonald's franchise, you can't just add your own menu items. You have to only sell whatever McDonald's tells you can sell. And when they tell you that they're discontinuing a certain menu item, you have to comply with their request to remove the discontinued menu items from your menus. Versus if you're with a mom and pop restaurant, you can change the menu all you want. All the recipes belong to you, the business owner, and they're all your property. They're proprietary to just your brand, so nobody else can use them. You can protect your recipes that way. Those are just certain benefits. And of course, when it comes to marketing, you can get as creative as you want, like your example with the footprint. When it comes to a franchise brand, they don't give you a lot of freedom when it comes to marketing. In fact, you get to do very little marketing, as they're going to be doing it for you at the corporate level on their social media pages. So that is another major drawback of having to deal with a franchise concept. Jam Burritos is definitely going places, and I can definitely see it turning into a concept where people can franchise it and open up their own one day. That is, you really want to go that route, because I do see it growing to that point. It's a great concept. You've got some fantastic menu items that I've been dying to try. And in general, I hope that the small business community took some great notes on everything you've had to share with us today, because these are little things that can save your business. If you don't want to go out of business due to certain external factors or rising prices in general, you've covered some stellar tips to help keep small businesses afloat, especially when it comes to the restaurant industry. Now, do you have any final remarks that you'd like to make before we close the show?
I just wanted to clarify that I am not knocking franchisees. There are major benefits of franchises, because you can probably walk into being profitable pretty quickly. And so there are major benefits to having a franchise, especially if you do not have a great deal of experience in the restaurant industry. So there are plus benefits to it. And we're going to start off as a franchise, but, you know, to the right person, we may sell a franchise. I would just say I would be looking for a person who has a love for the business and wants to, you know, buy a franchise. It would be this have to be the right person. But other than that, guys, I just really enjoy hanging out with you guys and talking to you in this sort of fireside chat. And just listening to some of the questions that Christian Gonzalez gave us. He is always doing a great job with trying to find, you know, speakers and subjects that are important to us as restaurateurs. So thank you, Christian.
My pleasure, Michael. It's always great to have you on BizCast, because you always have a lot of great tips for the restaurant industry, which are also applicable in other small businesses as well. But you really know the ins and outs after many years of being in the business. You always have some great information that could truly save somebody out there. Someone listening right now could be the owner of a struggling small restaurant out there, and you have some great advice that just might save them, that could keep their doors open. And I definitely appreciate having you coming on to share this wisdom, this insight, because you just might be saving someone's business. Thanks again, Michael. I hope you have a great day, and I wish you the best with Jam Burritos. We look forward to having you on this cast again.
Absolutely. Take care, and God bless you. God bless everyone.
God bless you, Michael. Have a great one.